Podcast. I am your host, Mikey, and it's a beautiful fucking Friday. It's been a long week. Spent the whole week working. My balls were stuck to my chair, but I get to lift them up today and stand, and it's going to be a great day. Today, we have a very cool guest, Robert, DJ Robbie Del Toro, in the studio. And with me, as always, is Oliver and Sandy, but they're not mic'd today. Hi. There you go. Hey. So they're not mic'd today. But anyways, what we were talking about before this was how sarcasm really doesn't translate on the internet very well, which is annoying because I posted... Well, okay, so I posted the words of a comedian from a podcast, convenient, onto Facebook, and my aunt comments, "Your cynicism is expected, but I know what a loving person you are deep inside." What a fucking nice thing for an aunt to say, and I mean that genuinely. You don't think so, do you? I don't think she was sarcastic. I think my aunt really believes that I'm a good person, and I think she's on the right trail. But in all honesty, it pisses me off that sarcasm is trained. I wish they had like some sort of like emoticon that can portray sarcasm. Do they have that? I don't know. I think it'd be good. Italics, I don't know. Maybe. Anyways, so
HTML tags.
What's that?
Use HTML tags.
HTML tags? God damn! See, now you're going too crazy. I know I gotta learn code, and I gotta take a class. I don't want to do that. But anyways, Robert, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me here.
That's great. I'm glad you got to make it in here. Yeah. So you're a DJ.
Yes.
And you're DJing regularly at what venue?
I just started playing at this place in Alhambra called Shaka's. It's a nice little Hawaiian restaurant. It has a bar. My buddy's a bartender there. He told me to come every Friday. You know, I get paid to have fun, drink, why not?
Hey, I don't blame you, man. If I could get that gig, I'd chime in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Is the food good? Have you ever ate there?
The food is actually really good. It's a Hawaiian fusion with Mexican food.
What?
It's pretty awesome. You know, you got some tacos there with some Hawaiian barbecue pork. It's legit. It's
okay, good. So that's how they mix it. Because I always wondered what fusion meant. Yeah. Like, it kind of confused me. Like, I think I understood that like they kind of mix the styles, but I didn't. You know, okay, yeah. A taco is a Mexican thing, but they put like Hawaiian type, yeah, you know, shit inside the
tortilla.
It's
pretty good. It's pretty good.
Okay,
yeah, I get it. Like it there.
All right. Yeah. Cool. So, how long have you been doing that?
Shaka's, like I said, I just started about 3 weeks ago, but DJing in general probably started about 3 years ago.
Oh, shit.
My buddy that's going to be there tonight, he's actually my mentor, just went to a party, saw him doing it, you know, got really interested and bought my own equipment and started from there.
What equipment are you playing at now? As far as like your...
I use this portable equipment. It's by Pioneer. Mm. It's a pretty heavy little beast, but... it mimics what the industry standards out there, but this is based where you connect it to a laptop and whatnot. And that's nice. How it's powered. So
that's cool, man.
Yeah.
How long have you been in, like, what kind of stuff do you DJ? Because everyone's like, it says they're a DJ, but they different shit all the time.
Sure. To make it pretty simple for everyone, it's EDM or electronic dance music. And from there, you got billions and billions of genres and subgenres of what EDM truly is. Mm-hmm. Personally, I like to spin trance music, house, trouse. Trouse is a little fusion of trouse and house, which, like I said, it just keeps expanding. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. See, I was hanging out with a friend of mine the other day, and I went to my first like electronic like kind of music like show. Never been before.
Yeah.
But I try to go in with an open mind because Lord knows, me and electronic dance music haven't always been the closest of genres, but I really did go in with an open mind and actually kind of dig it. I dug it for a little while. I still don't tell. I can't really tell a lot of the subtle differences between the like different kinds of genres.
Yeah, you know, basically, you know, there's, you know, just take for example drum and bass. Exactly what it's for: drum and bass nonstop. You just keep hearing that beat over and over and. Mm. You got that going on, and you got house where you got, you know, rhythms going in beats of four. So everything's different, and, you know, everyone either like it or you don't. But makes me feel good.
That's cool, man. I mean, yeah, the thing I kind of do like about it, it's a very, like, uplifting or, like, kind of, like, dancey party atmosphere. Like, it makes you want to just, like, be in that good mood. Like, just get your mindset into that, like, I want to have fun.
Yeah.
That's the way I think, at least whenever I hear it, like, and like I said, I don't understand a lot of the subtleties between different kinds of electronic dance music, but every time I hear it, I always feel like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Party.
It's fun. I mean, I take a lot of first-timers because they're interested, and they go, and they just keep on going. Mm-hmm. It's fun. I mean, it's nothing like a rock concert. For example, I went to go see Muse the other week.
Oh, shit.
And, you know, people are just...
They have a lot of like electronic shit in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There was actually dubstep in their last show. And pretty interesting. You can tell some of the crowd, the hardcore fans, weren't really feeling it. But, hey, I mean... You got to step out of your comfort zone and you got to expand.
Right, right. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
So you're not just into like electronic music. You like some like kind of rock bands too.
Oh, definitely, man.
How long have you been into like electronic music?
Electronic music, I think I got into this back in high school. I got into it by listening to some groups that were kind of like rock, techno, Prodigy, for example.
Oh, okay.
I got into it because of Prodigy. Surprisingly, this one movie, Mortal Kombat, that movie. Based on a video game, they had a lot of that music, and I'm like, you know what, this is really cool. This is really cool. So from there I just started exploring other bands of similar music.
Man, Mortal Kombat, that's old school. Yeah. Man. That's freaking awesome though.
I saw that movie in the theater and it was pretty awesome.
What was your like your first like big like exposure, like your first concert or kind of whatever, like who'd you go see, or like maybe a party? I don't know.
First concert I went to, I want to say I saw Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins?
Yeah. I was a really big, Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, and my favorite band, Rage Against the Machine.
Nice.
In high school, that was my thing, man.
Yeah, I like Rage, man. I'm a big Rage fan. Yeah. I think that they really mixed a couple of, they really found their niche in that band. But
yeah.
You told me once about like about you were like really young and you went to like a party with all a bunch of older people who kind of introduced you to like a lot of like DJing electronic music. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, when I went to that party, I'm trying to remember what that was. It was a conversation.
You're telling me how like you somebody older than you, or somehow I got that impression that you were like older, that they were older and they took you to like a party and you were talking to these girls. And
that's right. That was probably like my first underground experience. Underground. Yeah.
What do you mean by underground? Like
I'm talking warehouses in downtown.
What year was this?
This had to be in 1998, 1999.
Okay.
I go check it out. My cousin actually took me. And they were older than me, and they're like, hey, we're going to go to this underground event. Come check it out. I went, and it's awesome. You just go to some obscure part of downtown. There's no one there. The streets are closed. Everything's closed. You just show up at some warehouse, and some massive party with, like, a few 500 people is going on, playing, like, underground house music. And I think I had a time of my life there, just being exposed to that environment. For some reason, these older chicks thought I was hot. I was like only like 19 years old, and they're like, it was fun.
Wow,
it was fun.
That's crazy. How old were you then? So you're probably like what?
When I did that, I think I was 19 years old.
19 years old.
Yeah, 99.
Wow. See, I started playing in bands. I actually started with Oliver. He's my first drummer that I really worked with, and I was probably maybe about like 16. But it wasn't until, like, my later teens, like, 18, maybe 19, that I started playing, like, bigger shows at bigger venues. And when you're, like, when you're in those moments and you're, like, actually performing in front of people, you feel pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling. I used to say, like, it's better than sex. Like, just being able to be on stage and people enjoying the music that you're playing.
Yeah, it's a good feeling.
That's just such a great feeling. I love, like, the elation that I would get just from being on stage. And, like, to be honest, it's like, do you still feel that way now that you're, like, kind of DJing yourself?
Definitely. It really depends on the venue that you're at. If people are paying attention. for example, Shaka's, I'm just there. I'm just kind of more background music. But when I'm at an actual club that people pay to get into, mm-hmm. I'm definitely feeling I'm like at peak capacity in terms of just jamming it out and having a great time and watching everyone dance. I love it.
How much does the vibe of the crowd like affect you?
You know what? I tend to play to the crowd. If I see that they're liking a certain type of song, something a little bit quicker, faster, just with more bass, then I'll stick to that. You can see people kind of not really moving around, then I'll change it up. So I like mm-hmm. to read the crowd, and it's interesting. I think it makes the DJing a lot more, a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
But I like that.
It's a challenge of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing I could say that's like different with DJing and like being in a band. Because like when you're in a band, you got your set list, that's it.
Yeah.
Like you're playing that set list no matter what. I go in there, we practiced our 10 songs. We're going to play only those 10 songs that we have. We really can't change up or change down
right.
too much until right. you've actually built up a catalog of music. What's great about DJing is you have a lot more material to work with, so you can kind of like pull it, cater to your audience.
Yeah, definitely. for example, I play to, you know, usually older crowds at these things, and you know, I like throwing 80s in there because I know that's when they grew up. So I like playing some 80s remixes of Depeche Mode, whatnot, some old classic 80s, but with a little house twist to it. So people like that.
Like, what songs from Depeche Mode? Cause
I was just playing one, but Enjoy the Silence.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that one is I'm playing that remix right now. It sounds, you know, people like it. I can see people bobbing their heads to it.
So when you got like more of a younger crowd, what kind of like music do you go to?
Like, definitely like full on electro.
Oh,
electro.
So you don't work off that top 40 list or
kind of you know, stuff? Top 40, you kind of have to play that stuff based
on... What is your feeling about that? Because I know like a lot of people don't really dig it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you turn Kiss FM like on, you turn this on, they play the same crap over and over again. And it's just like, oh God, you know, they're playing this song like every hour on the hour. But, you know, when the crowd doesn't really know the genre that I'm playing, whether it be electro or trance, then I got to throw in some Lady Gaga remix in there so people can like, oh, okay, you know.
Right.
So sometimes you got to please the owners, man. The owners want to hear that stuff. They're like, hey, play something more mainstream.
Plus, you want people dancing because people dancing means people buying drinks.
Definitely,
and it is a business. There's a business end to it. How much of that business end have you kind of been exposed to? Because I know, like a lot of times, like if you know an owner or like a promoter gets involved, they'll be like, "Bro, you got to play a little bit more top 40. I want to hear some Kiss of them."
Yeah, you know, personally, that hasn't affected me. But DJs that I follow online lately, it's been happening a lot in 2012. You get a lot of big name DJs. They're getting kicked off the decks because they're not playing mainstream top 40. Wow. And they cater to the bottle service crowd. Mm. I've seen at least 3 or 4 DJs that are legends and they've been kicked off the decks because of the bottle service crowd. Bottle service crowd wants to hear some hip hop song, but yet you're in a club that plays nothing but electro. Right. And I hate seeing that stuff.
Bottle service crowd. So, like, what does that mean?
Bottle service crowd, man. You know, just people exactly that just...
People who pay for those seats that are usually douchebags.
Basically.
Excuse my French.
Basically, I mean...
But pretty much everybody... You know what? I went to a club in West Covina. It's called the Crazy Horse. And yes, it's called the Crazy Horse in West Covina. And I went there, and, like, the guys that had the tables at the bottle service... It just those, you know, the guy that like goes to the mall and buys like the flashiest fucking shirt, white shirt with the gold lacing kind of thing, like a gold lacing t-shirt, and like, God, it just looks stupid. Okay. Anyways, it bothered me, but I mean, whatever. He really flashy, and to me, it's like you're not, you know, I don't really believe you're a real person anymore at this point. It's like you're a big billboard, but whatever. And I see those guys, but yet. All the girls, all the pretty girls go over there and get up free shots, and then they come back out to the dance floor and dance with guys like me and my friends.
So, yeah.
I don't know. The crowd.
Those are the bottle rats.
Yeah. Yes. Is that what they're called?
That's what they're called.
Oh, I just learned a new term today.
Beware of bottle rats.
Yeah, I've seen that happen a lot. But, like, you know, a lot of times when you go into clubs and you see, like, the guys that are sitting at the bottle service, they're usually, like, I mean, obviously, if you get model service, you're throwing some cash down. So, I don't know. Yeah. They're not usually my favorite people to hang out with, to be honest. I mean, I've attempted talking to them. They usually think that, like, they got that little smugness about them. You know what I mean? like they sniff after they talk. But, anyways, okay, so... So, when you... So, you don't try to... Do you cater to the... Okay, what do you... Think more, because this is something that I know I've done too. Like, a lot of times when you're playing music, sometimes you feel like you should make songs that kind of more, or like, how can I say, mass appeal, a little bit more, like, kind of, I know that this is kind of lame and like this isn't really my favorite song, and I usually hate to play this song in the band, but people like this song because it's like that's their favorite song. But I don't like the song that I wrote. Like, we all wrote this as a band, and we kind of play it because we know people like it, but we don't really like it. It's not like our right. favorite thing, but right. you kind of got to play to your audience yeah. and give them like what they want.
Right.
So, but then the other side of the spectrum is like you have like certain bands, or I'm sure probably DJs as well, who they'll spend like a good 20 minutes kind of just riffing off of like whatever kind of stuff they have. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of bands will do like improvisation, and I know DJs know what's up with improvisation.
Yeah.
So, like, which, how do you balance that out?
You know, when you've been in the business for a while, and I've been on the business set, and in terms of promoting and whatnot, like I said, the crowd's not feeling it, and the owner's kind of has their eyes fixated on you, saying this isn't working. They want you to change it up. I mean, every now and then you got to throw some goddamn Pitbull song in there. You know what I mean? it happens. You know, it's. I truly hate that feeling, but sometimes you got to do it to get the people going. I mean, it's all about the business, selling drinks. You know, that's all it is. And even this little tiny restaurant where I'm at, to big clubs, it's all about selling the drinks, because that's where the majority of your money comes from. And you know what? Sometimes you got to just throw that Pitbull song so that people can, whatever, just buy drinks. But I truly hate it. I don't feel it in my heart.
You know, I was watching like this thing, and they were teaching. I was watching a TV show, and they were teaching like this guy had a DJ, and basically, one of the things they kind of put into him is like, what they do is they put a lot of high energy songs, and then they'll split it up with like a lower energy song, and they told the bar manager kind of told him, throw a low energy song just so people will get off the dance floor, buy drinks,
yeah.
and then come back when you put a high energy song. So you give them like a few minutes to go and rush the bar.
Yeah.
Is that kind of one of those things that you work off of as well?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, it's all about reading the crowd. you got to give them a break. You can't be playing high energy the whole time. You got to go grab a drink, et cetera. Usually I like to start my sets pretty slow. Start at a slower BPM, around 125, 126. Just kind of build up the crowd, let people just kind of coming in, get their drinks. And when the crowd starts, packing up the place, start bringing the energy up and just finish strong.
Right.
That's pretty much what professional DJs do, from my experience. Mm.
How many professional DJs have you, like, how many shows have you been to? You probably go to a lot, right?
I've been to, I've been to maybe a good 50 massives / raves in my life. It's crazy, man.
Wow. You know, okay, so this is one of the things that I kind of admire about like electronic dance music, is they have crazy freaking fans, man. I mean, I've never been to a rave, but I've seen pictures. And the girls that go to these raves, they're not wearing very many clothes.
No.
And to be honest, that's a pretty crazy fan, and people will just chill out and just rock out all day long to like the electronic, and they're like cult following. It's amazing how many people, thousands of people, they'll come to these kind of events, and there's a lot of them. I hear about like these events. You got your EDC, your Monster, whatever. You're this, you're that.
Yeah.
And they're like all year long. Like, there's like six or seven big ones, and then there's probably all sorts of different ones in between that I don't even know about.
Yeah, I mean, I go to all of them, and each one is different. They each have their own theme. Sometimes some are a little bit more dubstep oriented. Some is more trance. I mean, it's crazy, and the amount of followers that, you know, new people, it's insane. You know, you get a lot of people that are first timers, and they're having the time of their lives. You know, and I don't think this is going to die any soon. If anything, I think it's at its peak right now in the U.S. It definitely hits at a peak, because you got Kiss FM playing it. You got all these other stations playing it. and people know someone that go to raves and it gets them interested. And I don't think it's going to die out anytime soon.
I mean, it seems like the scene's kind of exploded, especially within the last like 5 to 10 years.
Yes, definitely in the last 5 years. It's just getting crazier. And these massives, they make hundreds of millions of dollars when tickets cost $100 a pop and up.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money. And like, because I've been to like giant, like, you know, like indie music festivals or like rock music festivals or metal music festivals. I've been to those and there's a lot of people there too. But like, that's like once or twice a year. Right. Whereas these things are going on all the time, and it's just like a flood of people.
Every other month, man. Every other month. And you know what? It happens everywhere. L.A., San Diego, Frisco. You got people going to other states. You got people coming from a lot of states, especially from Nevada and Arizona, Oregon, that all come down here. Because you talk to them at Massive. Oh, I came down from so-and-so, and they don't got that over there. So they all come down here. Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. So, I mean, you've been in this like kind of scene for a long time. How has it changed over the last like 5 to 10 years since 99?
Well, it's changed where everyone's a DJ now. Everyone's a DJ now. People just, you know, like, hey, that's so awesome. I want to do it. It's crazy, man. I mean, you go to Facebook and you see DJ pages and everyone's like, listen to my demo, SoundCloud. Everyone is posting. Everyone's a DJ now. It's funny. And how it's changed is it's become a little bit more digital. You know, back then you had your 1980s, early 90s DJs carrying crates of vinyls. That's what the DJ was. They're carrying their crates of vinyls. Then, you know, the CD came. And, you know, then people are carrying their little booklets of CDs. But now you can just show up to a gig with a USB stick and go on to the next gig 3 hours later. That's it, man.
Nothing to really pack up and
no.
It's a really quick, easy pack up and play.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's how it's evolved in that sense. Headphones and USB stick and you're good, man.
So technology definitely helped increase like the popularity of it just by making it a lot more accessible.
Yes.
And a lot more like distributable.
Yeah, definitely.
That's something that, you know, I feel like rock music will really never have because you have like equipment, you have to carry like guitars. You can't carry a guitar on a USB stick unless they kind of make some sort of like matter destabilizer or like deatomizer.
Someday.
And then you can kind of like shrink all the guitars into like a little box like that could fit in your hand. Wouldn't that be amazing? All right, scientists, work on that one. Anyway, but that's what's so great about like DJing because, I mean, you said you had a gig after this, right? Because it's Friday night and you gotta play at, what's it called again?
Shaka's.
You gotta play at Shaka's. So that's awesome, man.
Yeah, that's
well,
cool, man.
So how much equipment do you really carry? Like, because, I mean, you drive a sedan.
Yeah.
So it can't be very much equipment.
No, not at all. I mean, I just carry a bag. It has my laptop in there. Laptop has my music and the actual, the actual DJing unit. That's it. Just carrying a little bag and I'm good.
Wow. See, that's awesome. I don't know. I wish there was a way I could do that with my guitar, but I can't. I gotta get you carry now. But that's great, man. So you were playing clubs before.
Yeah.
Are you gonna be doing that again? I mean, now that you got this regular spot, yeah, it's pretty sounding like secure. Are you going to be venturing out to like any other venues or?
You know, definitely. It's all about networking and, you know, you meet people all the time. I'm a DJ or I'm a promoter for this place. You know, I've been a promoter myself and, you know, it's good to be on that side of things, you know, to see how things are truly run. So, you know, I'm a fan. I'm a DJ. I've been a promoter. I think I've seen everything. And promoting is hard work, man. It definitely is. It's just it's a whole different beast.
Well, I mean, promoting, I think, it's hard for anybody to do because you're trying to get people who've never heard you before.
Exactly.
To kind of come and check out your show.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, a website or something to kind of promote yourself?
You know what? I really hate promoting myself to my own friends. It's just, I don't know what it is, you know? It's because I feel like I don't want to bug them with it. You know, I have a job, I have a career in life, and this is more of a hobby. So when I have to promote myself, it's because we're trying to sell tickets and, you know, we got to get this place packed. Then yes, I have to promote. But I don't know, man. I just don't have it in me because I don't think that's what I'm really gonna do in life for the rest of my life. It's just a hobby.
You see, and to me, the hobbies are the things that show you like what you love to do the most, you know, because that's something that you're putting extra time into and extra energy into that you really, you're not getting paid to do.
Yeah.
But to be honest, that's what's great about a hobby. That's what I love about it, is that you can kind of, like, for me, my hobby is this. This is what I like to do. Yeah. And I spend a lot of energy between this and, like, being in a band. These are things that I spend a lot of time into, but it makes me the most happy.
Yeah.
You know, and it really brings a lot of joy to my life. And I know it's difficult to kind of promote something that you know that you do it just because you love to do it.
Right.
And it's like, to me, that's that other side of me. That's that, like, kind of more reserved side of me. It's like, dude, I'm doing this because I love to do this. Yeah. I'm not doing this for anyone else, really. But if you enjoy this as well, then let's do it. Let's all share this, like, this kind of experience. But to me, it's just the matter of doing it that makes me the most happy. Like, as far as, especially playing music, I love to play guitar and bass. I'll play whatever pretty much you put me in front of. But when I'm playing, I've been in bands where we've practiced every week for a year, and we played maybe 2 shows. And the whole thing, what for me was, like, everyone's like, oh, when are you going to play another show? Like, well, see, I was always in the band because I loved making music. That was my focus. And I kind of hated that promotion aspect of it, where it's like, oh, dude, we got to make some shirts, bro. We got to record a demo, bro. And then we got to put them out, and we're going to sell them for, like, $2 a piece. And I'm like, dude, nobody's going to buy your demo that's in, like, a sleeve of freaking, you know, CDs. Yeah. Nobody's going to buy it. Just give it away, because this is music that I want everyone to hear, and everyone should be able to hear it for free. I'm not trying to make this into a business. I'm trying to make this into an experience where anyone can enjoy. And that's just the way I've always felt about music. Yeah. It's something that should be shared. And it's not a tool for making money. I mean, should people who make good music make money off of it? Sure they should.
Yeah.
But for me, to the level that at least I've been at, it's always been about pushing my music onto other people because I feel like people would like to hear it.
Yeah.
And if they appreciate it, then that's great. If they don't, then they don't. But it's all playing. It's playing to your crowd, you know. Yes. And sometimes it's about finding, you know, your own sound, and sometimes it's about bringing the audience that you kind of want to promote to, bringing them your music.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of times that's the most difficult part, is because you try to find that niche, and then sometimes as a musician or as a DJ or as a whatever, you just suck. And you know, you shouldn't be promoting your shit anywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to call out any names. I'm just saying it happens. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come right back. Enjoy this music from DJ Robbie Del Toro.
Yeah.
I was just talking to Robert about when you first started getting into this music. Obviously, like, there wasn't the same kind of social media network that exists today with things like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and all that other stuff that kind of goes on, that ways that you can kind of promote your promote the venue or promote music.
Yeah.
How was it like when you kind of first got into the scene? How did you find out about, like, different gigs?
you know what? The gigs were a lot of word of mouth. I know back then, back in the old school days, there was a lot of info lines. You call a certain telephone number, and you hear the voicemail, and you hear about a gig. You just hear a real loud guy promoting, like, you know, May 19th, come down. So-and-so, call on the night of for directions. So they wouldn't give directions out to these places because they didn't want us to be raided by the cops. Mm. A lot of underground events, that is. So a lot of times you had to do what's called map points. You just go to where you get the actual directions. So you had to go to some obscure off-ramp in the freeway, and they give you the directions to the place from there.
Whoa, okay. So hold on. Explain this to me. Because so what would you do? You would actually leave the freeway. Yeah. You'd stop off at a spot, and you'd pick up directions?
Yes, you pick up
Did
directions.
Did you have to pay for the directions?
No. You just pick up directions from, obviously, one of the guys that's one of the promoters. And they're there for a certain amount of time, and they're just giving out directions on a piece of paper.
That's genius.
That's how it was done, man.
Yeah. Now it's just on Facebook, and they just blow it up until somebody.
Yeah, Facebook, flyers everywhere. Every time you leave an event, you're just bombarded with flyers, whether you want it or not. It's on your car, or they just shove it in your face. And that's how you hear about at least 20, 30 different events going on.
Mm. So then that's kind of how you got kind of sucked into it, and you kind of just kept on going with it.
Yeah.
So it's not like that no more. All you gotta do is pretty much, what do you do now? How do you do it now to promote like shows?
You know what? Just Facebook. You know, you go on there because that's where you do all your networking. You know, you make an event page, you invite people, you let them know. Obviously, you gotta kind of remind them at least. I don't know. I post it every Friday because I spend every Friday. That's as much promotion as I do because, you know, I know my friends. They let me know that they're coming. So. But you know, it's good to get fresh faces out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's the biggest crowd you played to? Like, cause I'm sure you played to like different size crowds.
Yeah. I think the biggest crowd I played to, and I'm glad I played there because, actually the number one DJ in the world named Armin van Buuren actually played at that place not too long ago. So I can say I played the same club where he played.
That's
cool. And the place is called Circus out in Hollywood. Mm. Circus Disco. So, you know, I play there, and that's probably the biggest venue I played, and this happened this past November, and that was awesome, man. It was really awesome because this is it. This is where the world-famous DJs played or play, and it's a great feeling.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I was playing, like, a lot of venues out in L.A., I think the first big one I did was Knitting Factory. And I remember just being on that stage and being like, holy shit. Yeah. I'm sharing the same stage with some of like the biggest acts that I've ever seen. Like, and being on that same stage, you just feel like so much history and so much energy that like flows from the stage. And like, I know people a lot of times I don't discount like building memory almost, like just the vibe that can kind of exist in a place that's something like almost esoteric that you really can't describe in like words, but it exists. Like there's like a feeling that certain venues will give off that kind of just bring back to like an ancient time. Like I know I've been to places like where it's like as soon as you step in there, it's like, wow, you know, I can go as far back as like the 70s. Like Led Zeppelin was playing here at this freaking venue, yeah. And I'm in the same venue, and it's just like, oh my god, that nostalgia of the place, you know, that you get from it.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling that like when I played like Knitting Factory, or when you play kind of like other areas like House of Blues or Will Whiskey. I mean, it's just amazing. And it's kind of cool that you can kind of share that same experience as some of the biggest people. How many people were at your show?
You know, it was I was actually in a side room. You had a main stage and you had a couple of side stages. And there had to be, I don't know, I'm going to say there was maybe 200 to 300 people at that club that night.
Wow, and, that's, you know, a pretty good turnout.
People tend to go room to room, and but it's good, you know. You get a few people that are kind of checking out. Oh, what's this room about? And who's playing? Mm-hmm. And they dig the music, and they'll stick around, and they move on. And that's basically how a club is.
Yeah, you know, it's like I think the first time I went to a club, I was probably maybe like 19, 20. And so I do the 19 or 20 year old thing. I go and I park at the parking lot down the street, get myself drunk, and try to down as many beers as I can. I throw up on the way to the door, and then I walk up.
It's hardcore, man.
Yeah, dude. I think the first club I went to, I was maybe about like, I was probably 18, 19. And my best friend at the time, he was like, dude, let's just kill this 12-pack and then we'll go inside and you'll be fine for the whole night. And I'm like, that's a great idea, man. Let's do that. So I'm there. I'm drowning out like beers. About maybe, I mean, I was still 18, so I'm not a really experienced drinker at this point. I'm not even legal. So I maybe down three. At the fourth one, he's like, dude, you got two more to go. And I'm like, all right. And you try, and it just won't go down anymore.
Oh,
it's
man.
It's like after some point, it's like I got to either pee or I got to take a break.
Should have been in the club by now.
Nope. And I was committed. I made a decision, and I was going to stick with it because, you know, that's the way that you do it. And damn, I ended up throwing up in front of all these hot girls that were parked in the car next to us doing the same thing. But they had vodka. See, that was a little smarter.
Yeah.
That doesn't hit your stomach as hard until later. Then you're in trouble with vodka. Vodka is a blackout for sure if you do that over well.
I don't know. Man. I drink a lot of vodka. I never blacked out.
See, that's the weird
Maybe
thing.
Not doing it right, but...
Do you know what? Okay, so this is the way I feel about it. I feel like everyone's got like their kryptonite, you know? Vodka. That's my kryptonite. Can't do it. If me and Vanka get into too many tangos, I'm going to end up on the floor, or I don't know where I'll end up. I'll just wake up, and then I'll kind of wonder how I got there.
Yeah. No, I can just drink it, you know, like it's no big deal, just straight up. I don't know. I think that's how, you know, I just built my tolerance for that. I don't know what my kryptonite is.
You're more tequila. You're more of a liquor guy.
Oh, definitely, man.
Yeah, I'm a big beer drinker, but I like liquor too. The thing is, it's got to be like the right mood. I have to find that right drink. And sometimes I feel a little like fruity, you know, if I drink like certain mixed drinks. Like my friend was always into like getting like those like really strong ones, like the like Adios motherfucker. Yes. And it's like this big blue drink. I'm like, I don't know about this one, dude. This one looks like a bad idea. And of course, it was.
Yeah,
a bad
you get
idea,
a couple of those. Yeah, it's gonna do some damage.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a big fan of.
I don't know, man. Liquor is a 24/7 type of drink, man. In the morning, you can have Bloody Mary, as opposed
Mary.
To a beer. You know, it's like
that's true.
So yeah,
that I will give you because Bloody Mary is my favorite morning drink. And if you have not had a Bloody Mary morning, you have not had a morning. Because they're delicious, and it's like, some people don't make them good. Some people, it's kind of an acquired taste for sure,
yeah,
but some people don't make them good. And you have to get the right person to make it for you. But if you get it a little spicy, especially for somebody who likes like I put hot sauce in everything. So somebody who likes a little more spicier food, Bloody Mary is not a bad way to go.
No, it's a good morning drink.
Yeah, it is. So you said that DJing is only your side job.
Yes.
So I'm going to move on to the next topic. What do you do?
Oh, boy. I work in a hospital. I've been working in hospitals all my life. And what I do right now is I'm the director of performance improvement. And, you know, when people ask me, what is that? You know, people always kind of just raise their eyebrows. It's like, what is that? What's performance improvement? And there's other terms for it. Quality improvement. Basically, you know, it's a mandated job by the government that we're taking care of patients. We're ensuring patient safety, that we pass accreditation, because without accreditation, you can't operate. That's just the name of the game for hospitals. So you can see when I talk to it in that sense, mm-hmm. I think people kind of understand a little bit better. But going off the title alone, people are clueless as to what it is. And even we're in the hospital, people still don't know what it is that we do because we're...
With people even inside that work in the hospital, they don't even know.
Behind the scenes and, yeah.
I mean, to me, how do you deal with, like... okay, because it's not like electronic dance music doesn't have, like, that kind of sort of darker kind of side to it, that connotation. Because a lot of people that go out to these events, usually they're taking like illegal substances or under the influence of heavy alcohol.
Yeah.
Which hey, who's who can hate? But you know, like when do you, is that one of those things you kind of just keep under wraps? You know, or
no? Basically, you know, these things, it happens. You know, I'm in it purely for the music. I've been a diehard music fan, like I said, for a while now, and people do these things. You know, my vice when I go out is definitely have a couple drinks, and I'm good with that.
Yeah.
There's people doing, it's pretty obvious because they're just there on the floor, kind of passed out or, you know, just twitching or whatever. But, you know, that's their thing. And, you know, yeah, you can't deny it. It's in that scene. And a lot of people associate that with that scene, you know, people on ecstasy or what have you. But, you know, it's been around forever. I don't think it'll go away. People do it. But that's not my thing, man.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree with you. And I mean, one of the things that I find interesting is like when you're talking to people, I don't try to shield like exactly like what or my hobbies are, but I know that there are certain kind of connotations or like associations that come with like a music scene or like a tattoo or these kind of like counterculture type activities where like things that. Like, okay, because I just got my tattoo, right? I just got my tattoo 2 weeks ago, and I'm super stoked about it, and that's why I keep bringing it up. but, you know, like, what originally, when I first started out and, like, working in a professional kind of setting, I thought, like, having a tattoo would pretty much prohibit me from even getting a job. Like, I thought, like, just having that image. And then I realized, like, first of all, I wear a shirt and tie every day to work anyways. So it's really nobody's business what's under my shirt.
Yeah.
As long as I'm providing a professional and straight service to somebody, why should it even matter, you know, what my, you know, what my my body looks like? It's like, if I was fat, would you not hire me? Come on, you know? Yeah. That's stupid. That doesn't make sense.
I think tattoos are just generally just well accepted now. I think it's gotten into the norm where everyone has a tattoo. But
yeah,
you got to cover it up while you're at work at the very least. But everyone has one.
Especially in a hospital setting, I think, because like they're. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, people who are in the hospital are usually older and they have a different set of values and a different set of cultural kind of stigma, and so people in that setting. They don't really, I'm not going to say that they're not caught up to date with the culture, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. They don't realize that like everybody pretty much gets tattoos now. It doesn't matter if you're a businessman in Wall Street or you're a thug from the streets. It's kind of a cultural change that's kind of existed, you know, within the last 10 years, I would say for sure.
I know I seen this ad where I think they just show this, you know, kind of bulky guy tatted up the whole sleeves, both sleeves. And one picture and the other picture, you know, he's wearing his doctor coat.
Yeah.
Who would have known? So I know that's how they portray it, but hey, it's the truth.
It is the truth. And I mean, patient or people's perspective does make a difference when it comes to the way they react to you as a person. And it's kind of one of those things that like, as though at the same at the one hand, I really don't agree with judging people by how they look. But you can't deny the associations that they were exposed to.
Oh, yeah.
You can't deny that, like, when they were younger, you know, they saw things as tattoos are, oh, that's a criminal, that's a gang member, that's what that means. And in the same sense, it's like with tagging, which I pretty firmly believe is kind of a pain in the ass. I don't really want to watch somebody sign their initials on the top of the freeway. To me, that's a waste of... That's stupid. To me, it doesn't look good, and it just kind of distracts from the entire thing, but whatever. But I do feel like there's people that are really good artists that do, like, certain, like, kind of street tagging that when they display, like, their kind of art on the freeway, like, I remember there was, like, a few years back. No, it had been a lot longer than a few years, maybe about several years. Several, seven, maybe? I don't know. Anyways, there was, like, a drawing on the freeway of, like, some kid burping. Like, with big cheeks, and they, like, had a burp cloud and everything. And I was like, wow, somebody came back and did this, like, over and over again and made a cool picture, like, right there on the side of the freeway. And I was like, this kid's good. This should be displayed because this is awesome. But how often do you see people just... and then it just looks like crap. You can't even tell what it is. It looks like three letters. And when I ask people about how why they do it, they usually say, "Oh, well, it's the thrill, man. It's the adrenaline that I'm doing something wrong, and like I'm you know, it's just crazy." But to me, it just looks like crap. Like, it doesn't look. I mean, if you're gonna do something, put your freaking heart into it. You know, make it creative, make it honest, make it true. Don't make it look lame. Like, your initials or your name or your crew name or whatever the hell you want to go by, it looks stupid. And I feel the same way about tattoos. Is a lot of times people get shitty tattoos, and they'll show them to you, and you're like, okay, how much you pay for that? No, I got it for free. And I said, oh. I noticed. You know? And it's the same thing. But, like, do I judge, like, their personality on the quality of their tattoos? No. And I don't think it should be an indicator for, you know, what kind of person they are inside. And especially for somebody who's as, I wouldn't call myself cynical. Yeah, no, I'm fucking cynical. Yeah, I'll call it that. You can call it a little cynical, maybe a little sarcastic at most times. But in all honesty, it's like sometimes you'd kind of, who you are isn't always what appears on the surface, and it's something that you, it's like if you can give somebody enough respect to get to know them, you can learn a lot more about them and understand that most people are actually really interesting and beautiful people. So let's, I don't know, I feel like the tattoo culture or any kind of culture that kind of distracts from who people really are, and it's a way, I feel like this is a habit of most people. It allows for you to kind of just label somebody really quick and figure them out. You can kind of put them in that category.
Yeah.
A lot of times you put somebody in like a category. You say, okay, well, this guy's wearing a, you know, baggy t-shirt, baggy pants, you know, whatever. He looks like a thug. That guy's a gangster. I don't want to talk to him. I'm not interested in anything else to say. Where? Hey, you don't know. Maybe that guy's a doctor. Who knows? You know, like the kind of example you said. I mean, is the association pretty close? Probably. And in most cases, and oftentimes, you know, a stereotype can be true. But it doesn't always necessarily mean true. And I think you should give people the benefit of doubt to prove themselves. And at least give somebody the opportunity. And I think that's what's lacking in this world, is the opportunity. And you working as a professional and as a DJ, I mean, you said, like, it doesn't really affect your kind of, like, you know, your work life, but do you ever feel like, have you ever shared that kind of, like, information, like, oh, you know, I also DJ at this place, and do you ever feel like kind of a judgment, or?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to, you know, what people think, you know, when they see me at these gigs, like, oh, this guy's, you know, it's just a DJ, they don't know anything about me, you know, they don't know that I have a career, they don't know I have a family, etc. No one knows that, you know? And, you know, I think it's pretty normal for people to think that. It's just like human nature. It's just your perception. So people are going to think whatever they're going to think. And, you know, people don't know unless they ask, you know, like, oh, so is this what you do? And no, of course not. And I tell them I have a real job. But, you know, when I'm up there, I'm just in the zone and I'm just playing. And, you know, every now and then when I'm done with my set and people are still hanging around, they'll say, hey, man, good set, you know, do you spin anywhere else, you know, and, you know, that's kind of how I get into, like, yeah, I have a life, you know, I have a job, man, so I just do this for fun.
That's great. I think it's, like, a beautiful thing. It's because, in all honesty, I feel like there's a lot more artists, talented artists and talented musicians and talented, like, people that may not be working in the industry that could best show their true ability, their true talents. There's some people who are really gifted, but they chose to get a career in a different kind of path because it's more practical or it's more accessible or the opportunity arose and you have to kind of take advantage. And when I think a lot of people would rather be a little bit more creative, but the great thing is that you don't have to get paid to be creative.
Yeah.
That's something that comes straight from the heart and soul. And I think sometimes money corrupts it. I mean, how many times have you listened to a band or even a DJ? And I'm sure the same thing occurs where, like, when they first start out, they're amazing and they start with such heart and such inspiration. And then 10 years down the line, you know, they're just throwing out radio crap.
I don't know, man. I think it just tends to happen in any form of music. It's just the way it is. You know, I've seen it just exactly as you explained. You know, there was DJs that, you know, only people from the underground kind of knew. And they just kind of rose up and boom, they're playing big festivals. And, you know, people call them sellouts. That's the point for some of these guys. This is their career. They don't have other jobs like I do. This is their life.
Right.
You know, they put blood, sweat, and tears into this, into producing and DJing and to get up there. That's what they, you know, and I don't blame them for that. But, you know, people are going to label you as, like, you're a sellout. And it's hard to get rid of that stigma. It's just always going to be there no matter what, right, regardless of the genre, rock or EDM.
Yeah, see, to me, it's like I look at it on two sides because I kind of feel that sometimes rock bands or even, I'm sure, electronic dance music, I'm sure they both probably sell out at some point. They're not playing to their art, and a lot of times it's difficult. When you're on top, when you're riding that train and pretty much like, okay, let's just think about it. Rock star life or DJ life, it's very similar. People are all around you. They want to have a good time. You don't really have anything else to do except for play music and get places. So when people are handing you drugs and alcohol and a party environment 100% of your life at all times, it's pretty hard not to get caught up in that kind of life. It's difficult not to like be absorbed into it. And I'm talking about this at the highest levels. Yeah. Obviously, at lower levels, it really doesn't exist. But when you're kind of absorbed or immersed into that kind of life, the creativity, the struggle, that kind of, I feel like most music, like good music, stems from like the heart, man. It comes right from the soul, where you have some sort of internal anguish or internal joy. Yeah. The best songs are really written when you're either extremely happy or extremely sad. That's always been my experience when I'm writing.
It's emotions
because people feel your emotions through your music, and strong emotions begat stronger songs or stronger, you know, set lists. And that's just something that only exists in music, and I think that's what makes music so much pure. But when you're in a constant party mode, you end up coming up with party songs. And everybody knows party songs, they aren't that great. They're just for partying.
Exactly, yeah.
There's not a whole lot of deeper message in there. And when I listen to like things on the radio, especially like a lot of hip hop or like even a lot of electronic, it's like it feels just like it's party music, which there's no real message and there's no real soul behind it. And I mean that's just one person's interpretation, and I'm not saying that there's not really good songs on the radio, but there's a lot of that crap too.
Oh yeah,
you know that stuff exists too, and that's I find really kind of frustrating. But on the same end, when a band becomes successful after working so hard, you have to give them a little bit of credit for making it that far, because it's not easy to make it in music, no matter what music you play. And I think that once you've gotten to that level, your fans are obviously going to, you know, they're going to criticize you no matter what, but you're doing what you love. And as long as you're putting out stuff and music that you love, then, and you truly are proud of, then my hat's off to you. Yeah. But I feel like a lot of times musicians get a little bit lazy, and they just kind of like coast their fourth or third album. And then it's like the magic's not there anymore, you know? The magic, the thing that everybody came to see you for is not there. That,
yeah. No, I mean,
je ne sais quoi.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've been in shows and DJs now, these DJs that, you know, they like produce one song and boom, they're like on this tour circuit. They're playing pre-recorded sets, man. They go to one town to the next and they're playing the same crap. It's like, okay, you know, you can download their sets, so you know what they played two nights ago, and it goes in the same rotation. And, you know, if you think that's bad, you know, it gets worse. There's DJs that just hit the play button and pretend they're DJing.
Yeah,
because they can pull it off, man.
What pisses me off is like when I see stuff like like Paris Hilton.
Oh god.
You know, like she's a DJ and she's playing to like a Brazilian crowd of like thousands of people. That kind of frustrates me because I don't think of her as a DJ, and I dare say that the girl's not that talented.
She just hit play. That's all she did.
Yeah. To me, that's not really doing anything.
No,
it's not. There's no way to prove that you actually mixed any of that. You just push play.
People think it's a cheap, quick dollar, man.
And that puts a bad name to all DJs,
of course. It definitely did.
It gives that, like, almost, yeah, well, if Paris Hilton could do it, anybody can do it. And I'm sure Paris Hilton's a very talented person for something.
Something.
I don't know. Maybe she can build a great sandcastle. Who knows?
She's a professional socialite, man.
Hey, I couldn't be a socialite, so whatever. But well, I'm just saying, as maybe DJ wasn't her calling. No. And if you're only pushing play, what the fuck are you doing? You know, I can push play and sit in front of a card instead of a crowd. And
anyone can.
Yeah, anybody can. So to me, that like brings down the entire name of everybody else in the industry.
Yeah, it does.
And it's like people are paying to see your best work. That's what people go to see you to do. And to buy drinks. Or, you know, to make money. But honestly, the only reason why people would ever actually buy a ticket to your show is because they liked you.
Yes.
And they wanted to hear your music. And if you're going off push and play, it's like you're not doing anything. You're not performing. You're presenting. And that's a totally different thing. There's a presentation and performance. But there's not always a performance and presentation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody can watch a movie. But not everybody can film a movie or direct a movie or act in a movie. You know what I'm saying? And these are things that bother me about, like, that kind of crowd. But it wasn't until, like, I started talking with you that I actually got, like, a deeper insight. It's like, okay, it's not just people pushing play. Like, that's not what it is.
No.
And that was, like, the perception that I held as a bias from myself.
Yeah.
Towards electronic dance music, where it's like, look, you want me to take a beer on stage and drink for 45 minutes and push play? I can do that, and yeah. I can pretend to push buttons on a pad. I don't care. I'll do that. But that's not really what a real DJ does, and I feel like that was one of those biases that I carried around for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
It's an easy thing to do because I know how electronic music works, and I know how easy it is to just kind of throw an MP3 in
there.
It's not hard. It's not brain science. As a matter of fact, it's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
So, as a DJ, and now that you've done it, like, how much have you learned, like, how difficult it is?
You know what? There's a lot of DJs, you know, in particular, Deadmau5, and everyone, you know, they call it, like, you're just pressing play. Okay, that is. I mean, it's not that difficult. I mean, as long as if you're a fan of the music, you kind of understand how beats tend to go. When you're bobbing your head, you're listening to a beat. And when you're DJing, you know, you got a beat match to transition or mix to the next song. So in theory, that's what you're doing. You know, there's different BPMs that you got a beat match. And, you know, you got to play around with the equipment to make that mix sound, you know, really, just really fluid, and it just transitions smoothly. Mm-hmm. You know, because you have people that train wreck, and I've seen professional DJs train wreck, and it's not good. It's like, what are you doing, bro? Like, shit, man. You know, you're not supposed to be train wrecking. You're supposed to be like a pro, but
yeah.
No one's perfect. The biggest DJs fail at big events, and
it happens.
It happens. It happens. Just like I said, it doesn't matter. In a rock band, you hit the wrong note, whatever, equipment goes out, you got to do something.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many countless times I've broken a string on stage, or a drummer busted through his drum heads. I mean, bad shit happens, especially on stage, especially when you're doing things live. But I'm saying that's the kind of stuff that you really can't fake. Like, that shit happens, and it's always on accident. Oh, yeah. It's never on purpose.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Paris Hilton can come up there and push play, and, like, never happen to her. Same kind of feeling with, like, did you hear on the news the other day about Beyonce? How, like, they're accusing her of, like, lip-syncing at the presidential inauguration?
Everyone does. Like,
okay, you can't hear me. Okay, for that, it's, what? How cold was it? It was, like, 30 degrees out there. She's in front of the president. She's in front of a large crowd. She also has an amazing voice, so she did a backtrack to her voice. Like, you're still hearing Beyonce. It's not like she's faking singing. Mm-hmm. It's just circumstances. Like, that would be the better thing to do.
Yeah, you know, like I said, a lot of DJs, it, just exactly as she talked about, I think it's pretty normal in the industry, but when it comes to DJing and you hit play and you're pretending that you're DJing, that's like, oh God.
Now you're just a faker. Yeah. Now you're a phony.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And like, look, I think all people should perform live. If you're recording, to be honest, I think that's a cheap trick. It's not fair to your fans. It's not fair to your audience. But obviously, not all times can you perform at your best level. But that's just life, and I feel like you should embrace it and do your best. And that's all people should ever expect from you. And look, it's not like I'm trying to give Beyonce a hard time. But in all honesty, it's like, dude, the girl could have totally sang. She knows how to sing. She's a great singer. She could have sang whatever. To be honest, it shouldn't have been an issue. And honestly, for people to make it an issue, then they're not focusing on the right part of what the presidential inauguration really means. You know, to focus on something as trivial as a performance, that's just ridiculous. It's for entertainment value. If you weren't entertained, then get on with your life and just forget about it. Who cares? Take any, you know, salt off the name of Beyonce, nor does it take any salt off the name of the president. It's just what happened. You know, people hold, especially celebrities and people of power, into like a position of what, like, they're inhuman. They hold them to inhuman standards. Everybody makes mistakes. Now, should people hold accountable? I totally agree. And if, you know, whether or not what happens, you know, that you're fine to criticize them. But to be honest, it's like, in light of what the actual event was, that was kind of a stupid thing to focus on, to be honest. But we're trailing over an hour, so I'm going to end this podcast. But thank you, Robert, for coming in and doing this podcast.
This was fun.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I hope to have you back again. We can talk about some other stuff.
Not a problem.
But yeah, thank you guys for all tuning in to another episode of the Mo Show Podcast. My name is Mikey. I'm signing out.
Bye, guys. See you guys.
Awesome. Okay.